It's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champy's Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the UGA Sports Live Podcast here at Champy's on Baxter Street. My name is Roddy DeBulsey. I'm joined by Jake Roos, the recruiting superstar at UGASports.com, and former Georgia head coach Jim Donnan. We got a lot of fans, a lot of friends, a lot of people here eating at Champy's because it's the best place to get your fried chicken, catfish sandwiches. We got some
sausage, cheese, and pickle plate coming.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes, sir.
We got that. That's the best sausage you can get.
Did you make an early order on that?
Yeah,
that's
we did.
Pretty good.
We did.
The minute we walked in the door, Coach, we're like, hey, we need that sausage, pickle, and cheese plate. Also got some tamales coming. So, yeah. So, and I tell you, they're fantastic tamales. If you ever get a chance, swing by Champy's and try them out. We got a lot to talk about. Georgia had a, I don't want to call it a big win over Vandy, but it was a more confidence-inspiring win over Vanderbilt. I know it's been rare that you would say big win over Vandy, but Georgia did some good things. But what everybody wants to talk about is the upcoming game with LSU, and we will definitely get into that. Quick shout-out to Athens Ford, Aaron Overhead Doors, Your Pie, Academia Brewing Company. I'm enjoying their beer. Cable East and 365 Game Day. We'll talk more about each of those in turn during the show. But, Coach, let me turn the show over to you for a minute.
Yeah, you know, one of the things about this show, we get some breaking news, and I got some breaking news on the Arkansas-Mississippi game, which really doesn't mean much to people, but there's this one kid at Mississippi, he's trying to get eligible for the game. He's in this logic class, and the professor said, hey, I want you to play. You're a good player, but you're just not answering these questions like you're supposed to. And he said, well, give me a chance. So he said, okay, I'm going to just ask you one question, and if you get it right, you can play over there in Little Rock on Saturday night. He said, okay. He says, how do you spell Mississippi? He said, the state or the river? And there was this lady that was getting ready to have a birthday, and she told her husband, said, I'll tell you what, said, I want something shiny, and it'll go from 0 to 50 in 3 seconds. So he bought her some bathroom scales. So that's let's get right. rolling that's there, man. Right. Let's go.
That's not right. That's cold-blooded, Coach. speaking of
I thought old Miss Togan's pretty good.
It was a tip of the scales. I want to get your thoughts on the Vanderbilt game. I know my one takeaway from this is just because it's kind of become a look, you go.
Here we go.
Oh, my goodness.
Good timing. Good timing.
Wonderful timing.
Hot tamales.
And some tamales. Oh, yes. Thank you so much. And
it's going to make me order a to-go plate today, I can tell you that.
So we got to get those tamales in here in the shot and that fantastic sausage and pickles and
let's
cheese.
Get right to that game. I'm just going to tell you right now, in my opinion right now, the glass is half full for Georgia. I'm talking about everybody talking about what's wrong with us, penalties, stuff like that. You know, you're going to have some penalties and all, but we played 6 games, and we've been a dominant football team. Certainly we haven't been challenged much, but we've done some really good stuff throughout the year, and we got a little fan base here. So, anyhow – I think the biggest thing with our team is we've got to just understand that everything's getting ready to ramp up a little bit, but we hadn't really had to play our whole team for 4 quarters. We hadn't had many problems in the kicking game at all, and I just – as critical as you like to be on certain things, I just see the youngest team in the SEC. By far, we're the youngest team.
That's true.
We're performing at a level where, you know, there's only 8 or 9 teams undefeated, and – we're going to be favored in every game, even though, you know, LSU down there is a tough place to play and all. But we got an outstanding coaching staff led by a tremendous head coach that knows how to win there. Do you realize that Kirby Smart's record at Death Valley is 11-1?
Really?
Did a little research through my friend Tony Barnhart, and he's going to come out with a story on it. But if you go back to 98, Kirby was playing in that game, had 12 tackles, did a great job. Then he took a job at LSU and was 7-0 as an assistant coach there. And then at Alabama, he was 3-1. So he's 11-1. There's not many people can say they've won that many games at Death Valley as a on their resume. So that's pretty comforting. He knows how to go in there, and I'm sure we have plenty of negative things that people are going to ask about. But
now, I just like
one other thing here. I like the fact that Terry Godwin, we've been kind of holding him back. You know, he's had a hurt his knee, then he hurt his hamstring. He's really starting to come to the front. Same thing with Swift. Really looked like Swift in that game the other night. What I'm talking about, he looked like what he's capable of. And, you know, there's not many teams can lose three starting offensive linemen at a certain point in the game, three different games like we have, and still not miss many beats. And when you look at, we've lost Thomas at one point, we've lost Ben, and then we lose Kenley last week. I hope he'll be back, but just goes to show you there's a master plan out there, and we've done a good job with it.
You know, you mentioned one thing that I want to touch on real quick, and that was the idea that Georgia's not played really you know, all their starters all the way through any of these games. They've been rotating these younger guys in, getting some reps for them. How important is that now that you're into the stretch here?
Well, for sure, experience-wise, it's great, but morale is good. I mean, you talk about having practices where you got competition, you're going to reward them with playing time, and that's the ultimate reward for them, Jake, to get in the game. I mean, that's why you come to any school is to play. I mean, it's one thing to go make a trip and everything or dress out, but you want to get in the game. And we've had guys come in at different points in the year with this new rule of the red shirt that's really helped us. I mean, how about Jordan Davis the other night? Come on. Ooh. I mean, this guy is a load, and yes, he's going to get even better. And I've just seen him progress through good coaching and good motivation and also losing some weight. He's just a young kid, 18 years old, and he really was a force in there just because he's such a space eater. He takes up the area and forms good rush lanes with everybody else. And the other thing, you keep watching Reese come in there. You see Tindall get – and then some of these reps aren't really reps where they do a lot, but they're out there when the band's playing and they're making calls and they're making adjustments, and that's invaluable. That's going to help. And even though we've substituted and they talk about quarterback and all that, for Justin to get 24 snaps in a game like that, can't help but help him too. And I thought Jake really threw the ball extremely well, you know, throughout the game, and that's going to be a big part of this game plan. I mean, I'm not going to divulge anything that I know about it because I haven't talked to him, but if you play man coverage against Georgia, you better be having some people that can cover beside your corners, because Greedy Wilson's a good player and this other corner's a good player, but if we're in a different set beside just a phone booth where we got an I formation, we're spread out, and all of a sudden, where's Ridley? Where's McColl? Where's Godwin, where's Nauta, where's Swift, and you got to play man coverage on that. I don't care how you rush in a passer, that's going to put a lot of pressure on LSU's defense. I really believe that.
Absolutely. And the name you mentioned there, Channing Tindall, I haven't seen a lot of people talk about this, and we didn't get a chance to because we didn't do our post-game show last week. Sorry about that. It was a little late when we got out of there.
Yeah, I know. I waited until 4 o'clock in the morning. I was over there. What's the deal?
But Tindall actually had 5 assists on the tackle sheet last week, which was second in the for the whole team. That was an impressive number. I think that's a great sign. He's a kid that they're expecting a lot of. I know the further he progresses, and that's right. Got to be a great first step.
Exactly. And if you just go back to Roquan's first year, let's put on a clip of 30 or 40 plays of him and see how he played. I mean, I'm sure he was good, but we didn't know a lot about Roquan his freshman year, and he's turned out to be the Dick Butkus Award winner. But because of all the pomp and circumstance of talking about 5-star guys and putting them on the stage and everybody expecting them to just come out there and be an instant success, we have a tendency to find out what they don't do right instead of what they're doing, you know. And I'm a very realistic person, but I think positivity is the way we need to go with this team right now. This team has got it all ahead of us.
Now, we spent a good number of weeks pointing out what they were doing wrong, and this week, yeah, you can point to the penalties, and Kirby Smart is not happy about that. But he also has pointed out in years past some of the most successful teams in the nation, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, they are loaded with penalties. It's aggressive playing. The only thing that bugs me about some of the penalties are the where the guys lose are cool. And I'm going to write in my 3-2-1 this week. I'm going to write about Cade Mays because I said on this show he's a personal foul waiting to happen. But at the same time, I can't fault him because he's fighting for his guys.
Yeah, the one he had again, that one where he just slapped the guy away a couple weeks ago was not good. But this one here, I mean, it shouldn't have been called. This one was should have been called. But I just think the thing about penalties is you look at when they happen and who you're playing against and all that. I mean, we got some garbage penalties there at the end of the game. But, you know, when you guys are in there and they're trying to really do well and they know they're not going to play much, sometimes they take chances they might not take if they're in there with the regular group. And, you know, we've called off the dogs there. I mean, you know, we pulled out – we had the ball on the 8-yard line. We put our third group in there. And but they continue to try to score at the end of the game, and they got a, they called a timeout with 2 seconds to go. You know, hey, that happens sometime, but I thought that was kind of Mickey Mouse myself calling. I think it's okay to score, try to score, but don't call a timeout with 2 seconds to go when you're down 40. What was it, 40-something, 41-6 at the time?
What impression does it leave on these older guys to see a guy like Cade, who's a first-year player, a true freshman out there playing significant reps and has all season, to see him kind of take that liberty and be like, hey, I'm going to step up and I'm going to defend my guys. I mean, how does that endear him to a team? I assume it's got to be huge.
It does because, you know, even though they don't their numbers don't have on their freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, they got their number in their Georgia. You know what I mean? They got that G on their helmet. So if you're on this team, you're expected to play your role, and whatever it might be, you got to step up and do it. And in his case – the first time he was called on against South Carolina, he was as a battlefield promotion, man. I mean, you know,
no
the band's playing down there in Columbia, and he stepped up. But the thing that you do is you earn that respect by the way you practice and you compete. And these kids, and that's one of the reasons we have this show. We talk about it. A lot of people don't know that don't listen to this show, is our practices to this point. I think both teams, offense and defense for us, have gone against a lot better teams in practice than they have the first six games.
Each of the guys will tell you that, too. They say it in those Monday pressers.
So now you're going against those guys, and if you're the second team O-line, you're going against that first team defense, and he's lining up there trying to block DeAndre Walker, and he's up there trying to block some of these, you know, Rochester and these guys. So sometimes successful, sometimes not. But I think in the case of Cade, the other thing they respect is the fact here's a guy that without question proved that he wanted to be at Georgia. He had every reason to go to University of Tennessee. He grew up there. He everything about his dad played there. He you know, probably never watched any other games except the Tennessee Vols. And when push came to shove, he came to Georgia because he wanted to be just like these other guys and know he had a chance to compete for a championship, which was pretty vivid that with Tennessee, the way they were trending downward and we were trending up. So that means a lot to me as another player to know here's a guy that's willing to sacrifice being in his home territory to come be part of us. So I think that's very respectful too, don't you?
Absolutely.
And I also like that you saw a bunch of the other – speaking of the freshmen – towards the end of the game there, I looked out and saw Jamari Sawyer, Trey Hill, Owen Condon.
Erickson.
Warren Erickson, all on the field at the same time. The only reason Cade Mays, the fifth offensive lineman, wasn't out there is because he started the game.
Yeah, he was already winded from the first half.
So they had to take him out and put in Kendall Baker. And I was thinking, man, if there's a look ahead at the future, you know, there's your guys lined up.
Well, they are. They're going to be good, and I think – you make a good point, and I don't forget this, and this is the only time I'm going to interrupt you today, but I mentioned Davis.
Sure,
I mentioned Davis, but I got to mention Adam Anderson.
The people are behind you. The name is popping up all over this chat.
Hey, yeah. Same number as Lawrence Taylor. I mean, good gracious,
is
that guy.
How do you bull rush a guy that was 90 pounds heavier than him and still hit the quarterback? And then the quarterback's going to get up chirping at him.
He's a stud, I'm telling you.
How about our defense, really? When you look at seriously.
You stole my thunder there.
We have shut down two of the better passing games in the conference completely cold. Two of the best receivers just completely shut them out. That the Hall kid, and then last week, Melinda, what's his last name, Lawrence?
Don't forget Deebo Samuels.
Yeah, well, we did a good job on him, too. He caught several passes, but not complete shutouts like this.
Yeah.
So, and I think that goes to show you the one overriding thing about our defense that I think stands out to me from the last 5 years, going even back to when Grantham was here. We play the ball in the air. The ball is contested now. I mean, yeah. There's not many guys wide open. Or as the coach – what was the coach from the – used to be the coach of the Cardinals, who's now doing TV.
Bruce Arians.
Yeah, he said wide ASS open on TV, and you shouldn't say that. There's not many of those out there now, do you think? I mean, we really played the ball.
I remember in the Willie Martinez years, numerous times you'd see, how's that guy – 10 feet radius, no one around
him. Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. The cushion was unbelievable.
Well, not just the cushion, but, you know, the wheel route went uncovered a lot. The tight ends would, you know, jam at the line. And if they paused more than a tenth of a second, then they would peel off in a little out route, wide open in space. And then you're trying to tackle them with, you know, a little cornerback. And it was just, again.
It was a recipe for disaster.
It was. And, yeah, you kept everything in front of you, but by the time – then you're in red zone defense, you know. And
yeah.
After a team is pushing on you that long, your defense is out there forever. I do like the fact that this defense, though, we had questions about it. And we could talk about Jordan Davis. I thought he did a great job when Vandy was getting success running the ball. Davis came in. He stopped that cold. Not just him by himself, but he made a difference. But I also want to give a shout out to Tyler Clark and Jonathan Ledbetter. They graded out fantastic in this last game.
Tyler Clark killed a guy.
And yeah, he did. And something the coach had mentioned, I think, 4 weeks ago. You know, they're working to take away the passing game, but this time Georgia took away the run and had vertical pressure on the quarterback from the interior lineman. And I thought that changed a lot of what Vandy was trying to do because. Yeah, you're used to seeing pressure coming from DeAndre Walker. You're used to seeing something come, you know, maybe from Walter Grant.
Morris,
you know, you've seen something come flying around the edge like that. But when Ledbetter's coming through, after he's beat his man and Clark was killing people, I think that sets up well for what you're going to do. Because you're going up against LSU's Burrow. That kid is he's pretty bloody good.
Yeah, and he's
– So you're going to need that revamped defense. We've got to stop the run and – take away their pass and get some pressure on him, not just from your speed rushers.
Yeah, and it's easier said than done with them. They're going to commit to the run, and they're going to maybe not run as many spread formations. They'll have some guys open because play-action pass are hard to defend, particularly if you're running the ball effectively. So, it's you know, you just can't completely shut people down. But I do feel like that they've got some issues too. Their left guard's out. And that was pretty evident in the game. The one good thing about us playing at 7:30, you get to watch a lot more games. You watch the Florida game at 3:30, like Dave McMahon down there in person watching it. But we're in a situation that you get to watch and study the personnel a little bit. And I think Florida got some good matchups on pass rush. I mean, you know, when they had to throw the ball, they had got 5 sacks on the LSU. And the kid hadn't thrown an interception, and he threw 2 at the end of the game. He'd thrown 175 passes. But I did want to say one other thing here about preparation for a game like that, because I forget things now at my age. But I forgot them when I was younger, too. But
55 must be
the
hell.
The point about our preparation that I think is different than back when I used to coach. We used to get scouting reports. And, you know, the GAs would draw up all the stuff and write up stuff about the personnel and all. And, you know, you looked at it and all. But the biggest thing, you want to get on the film or the tape and start studying the team. With our situation here now, with Kirby Smart in charge, we have, you know, a myriad of different people. But two people I want to single out here are our two analysts, Jay Johnson with the offense Tyson Summers with the defense. Now they work exclusively with their group. You know, one of them's an analyst for the defense, one for the offense. But after they get through with the week, like Wednesday afternoon practice, they start on the next opponent from this standpoint. Yeah. What Kirby gets them to do, Tyson, instead of watching the other team's defense, you know, like he normally does. I mean, the other team's offense to prepare. He goes and looks at LSU's defense, okay? And then he goes over there and talk, and that's not his job normally, but he goes over there and presents a scouting report on Sunday to Jim Chaney in the offense. Okay, this is their personnel. This is the way they substitute. This is their groupings, all that stuff. So when you start watching the tape, you already have a good idea that you can look for things instead of having to delve it out yourself. And consequently, the same thing with Coach Jay Johnson. He'll go and look at LSU's offense, even though he works with our offense all week and gets the other team's defense set up. So everybody understand that? He gets in there and he gives them a – he goes in there and talks to Mel Tucker and the staff, said, okay, here's what I think about Joe Burrow. You know, when he looks to the right, he's going to the right. Or he looks to the left – you know, I'm not sure that's it. But he really gives them a good idea with his breakdown that, boy, I wish I'd have had that. And that, you know, that would save me a lot of time. Yeah. You know, you got to – get all that stuff. And, of course, coaches earn their money and they do it. But I think that little tidbit right there that I see us do, and I'm sure other teams do it too, but we got two masterful coaches that doing that with a lot of experience. You know, these guys have been coordinators in big games. Tyson Summers was the coordinator for UCF when they won a Fiesta Bowl against Baylor. You know, Jay Johnson was in Minnesota when they're winning big games up there. So these guys know what to look for.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you feel that Burrow compares to the quarterbacks that they've already faced this season? Is he a bit more dynamic?
I think he's pretty much as close to Jake Fromm as you'll see out here because, you know, he's a coach's son. His dad was a coach at Ohio U, defensive coordinator. He had a chance to sign at Ohio State as a dual threat type guy. He's a good enough runner, just like Jake. If you give it to him, he'll run. He's a solid passer, and he doesn't have a lot of big stats, but I think they're very similar in what they do. You know, he's got two good road wins. So at this point in his career, far as not Jake now, but Jake last year, you know, I think this guy – I wish he wasn't playing for him. I think he's a good player.
I don't say
he's Jake Fromm, but don't get me wrong, but I think he's a similar type athlete, similar type size, and is definitely in charge. He knows what he's doing.
I've got to think that benefits Georgia, you know, to have some of those same similarities out on the practice field every day to practice against.
Well, yeah, they're not going up against, you know, I don't call him a true running quarterback because he'd rather pick you apart.
Right.
But he can tuck it and run just like Jake does. And we've seen when Jake does that, it's brutally effective, and Georgia's going to have to plan for that. Here's a guy who's maybe a hair better runner than Jake, and I think that's very effective. I mean, that's always been the knock on LSU for the last 10 years. Well,
not having a quarterback.
Not having a quarterback. It's been forever since
we sent him one.
that's about true. And, of course, we sent him a couple other Georgia quarterbacks. It didn't work out as well. So,
true.
You know, they can't all be great quarterbacks. Real quick, I want to let everybody know what's going on at Athens Ford. You got our little truck here, our Raptor. I like what they're doing. They have a $1,000 bonus cash for first responders above and beyond all their other October specials, because we're in October now. They are honoring their first our first responders with $1,000 bonus cash on top of current offers. I thought that's very impressive. I mean, like I said, these people are just they're just good people. But right now, I'll let everybody know that the 2018 Ford F-150, there's still some 2018s out there. The XLT 302A crew cab, it's $14,500 off. And almost $8,500 of that comes straight from the Athens Ford discount. That's ridiculous. So if you want almost $15,000 off of a Ford F-150.
And you do.
Trust me, it's a wonderful truck. And the 2018 Ford Explorer that I bought, the XLT 202A, right now it is $9,500 off. You see a theme here? The 2018s, they're trying to get rid of, make room for these 2019s.
Yeah, hey.
So you can get one for almost $10,000 off of that 2018 Ford Explorer. And we've had some folks go out and get them. They love them. Or you can get, there's another offer. You can get $2,000 bonus cash if you finance it at 0% APR for 60 months for qualified buyers. So you can still do the 0% financing. Instead of the $9,500 off, you can get $2,000 bonus cash and the 0% financing. If you want the Ford Escape, you don't want something quite as big as the Explorer, but just, I mean, something with almost as much room as the Explorer, but lower price tag. The Ford Escape is $19,995.
$20,000 gets you out the door, brand new car.
For a 2018 Ford Escape, it's unreal. So you're basically saving $6,700, you know, off of $27,000.
Not bad.
Escape. I think that's pretty – well, no, they do have some others, but the last one I'll tell you about is the Ford Focus. I drove down to the Masters in that with my friend Mark.
Thanks for taking me.
Well, you can come next year. No, you can't. The 2018 Ford Focus Special Edition, $13,999. So under $14,000 for a 2018 Ford Focus, which is a great car. Like I said, I enjoyed that ride from Athens to Augusta. It's fantastic. So if you can get one, a new one, brand new car for $14,000, you can't beat it. We'll be taking my Explorer down to New Orleans Thursday. Packing the guys up. You're leaving, what, tomorrow?
I'm leaving tomorrow. Luckily, I'm going to try to beat this hurricane out of town.
Your boss is an idiot. I mean, he had earlier.
I got some stuff to take care of in New Orleans.
Are you going by Beau Rivage on the way now?
I might. I might see if I can get the pilot to swing by there.
So you're trying to you're using this hurricane as an excuse. You've been planning to go on Wednesday since four years ago.
I don't think that's true.
You know why? Don't lie.
You know why they call hurricane after women? You never heard of a hemicane, have you?
In covering college football, I think I've met a few.
Yeah,
they're just absolute destructive forces. Speaking of destructive forces, I want to give a shout out to Georgia's offensive line. They lost Solomon Kindley. He went down. I think he went and played like 20 snaps or less than that.
Yeah,
I mean, he wasn't out there very long. And this is the third time you mentioned earlier, Coach, that Georgia's had to replace a starter. But the guys that are coming in, we saw Trey Hill do a good job. We saw Jamari Sawyer do a good job. Justin Schaefer can get it done. I've just been very impressed with – in the first couple of weeks, there was like half the line couldn't run block well and the other half couldn't pass block well. Then there was a bunch of pass block problems. Then there was – the run block was sporadic. The guards' play was inconsistent one week. The next week it was great. I thought this past week Georgia's offensive line gave – when it comes to pass blocking, they gave Jake Fromm some time. He went through some progressions, made some big throws. I was looking at that throw to Terry Godwin. He had all day.
Oh, absolutely.
And he loaded up. I mean, and I'm not going to take anything away from Jake Fromm, but, I mean, he had – I'm not saying that anybody could have made that throw because it was a long one, it was on the money, but he, as a quarterback, he's got to start to be feeling a little more confident. And we also – he had time to work through his progressions and get to a couple tight ends.
You got
to
give him credit, though, because we have been – a little bit light in the britches on pass pro, and yep. You got to give him credit for not getting happy feet when you got that much time. A lot of times when you've been sacked some, and I think we were like 1 out of 14 going into that game on third down. That was a first down pass, but you know we were 1 out of 14 making it 3rd and 9 or more, and that, you know, you hope you can be better than that. But I give Jake a lot of credit for not, you know, bailing out there. He just hung in there and threw it. And the other thing. People say, you know, hey, we look better with the tempo at the end of the half. I mean, that it's different at the end of the half. Team defenses are not going to be – they're going to be playing, you know, more field position than they are regular game because they're trying to defend, keep you from going, so they're going to give you the shorter throws. And we hit some of those, and then we dumped it off to your favorite guys, the tight end, some too. it was an excellent execution of that, but – I think we're fairly capable of running some no-huddle stuff.
The question, though, is, and I see this all the time, if it's successful, if it's so successful you scored in 70 seconds, why don't you do it every time you get the ball?
Yeah, sure.
You know? So why don't you start out that way and just do it the whole game?
I think some people that would say that don't watch our games.
I know, I'm just not talking
but
about
they
you.
Do.
Hey, we don't ever huddle. Look, our linemen are always at the line. Sometimes we run plays fast. Sometimes we run a medium. Sometimes we take a long time. Sometimes we check off. But as far as just tempo, we haven't run a real racehorse, NASCAR-type stuff a lot. But we can do that, you know, particularly after a big game. Sometimes we'll go down there and do it. But, you know, I think all this stuff, I mean, to be a coach or a player at Georgia at this point when you're number two in the nation, you lost in the championship game, you are under so much scrutiny right now, it's unbelievable how many people are authorities on it. And that's okay. I can see it, but we're 6-0, you know.
But everybody's waiting for the shoe to drop, Coach. Everyone's waiting. They're trying to identify what's the Achilles heel of this team. It's in other words, if you know the person you're with is going to break up with you, you're trying to prepare yourself for the heartache. So they're worried about, well, hey, is it going to be the pass pro? Is it going to be the running the ball? And I want to go back to the tight ends real quick.
The Winston Churchill, the fear of failure is worse than failure itself.
No, you're right. So hey, there are a lot of people were mad about a 26-point win over Tennessee.
I tell you, that's okay, and that's not my job anymore to argue with them, because I don't want to do that. But I do feel like we're going to have some peaks and valleys down the stretch here. Every team does. I mean, you're going to see some situations where we don't look hunky-dory, but
I want to pull two things together.
How many teams can be look at their last six games on their schedule at this point, besides us, Alabama, and Ohio State, and maybe Notre Dame, because their schedule, and Clemson, can say you're favored in every game you play the rest of the year?
And not only that, you've won by double digits in all these games, and you're averaging, what, 30, 40 points a game?
Clemson rushed the field against Syracuse. So.
Well, yeah, that's true. Of course, they do that all the time.
I mean, they do. Yeah, they do. It's a regular
but
thing.
But I want to pull together two kind of thoughts that I've had bumping around here. I thought the offensive line played really well, and they gave Jake Fromm time. Then when they needed to run it, they did. I thought the tight ends had a big game in pass protection, catching the ball. And shout out to Jackson Harris. He came back and had some major blocks, a good catch and run, picked up some speed rushers. And I think what pulled it all together for me for the offensive line play was the drive in which I think they handed the ball to Swift. And somebody was stood up, maybe Harry, and they were stood up at the line of scrimmage, or at the goal line, and all those big men got behind him and pushed him into the end zone.
Yeah.
And
I like that
at the
rule.
Bottom of that was Jackson Harris, who just got absolutely smashed.
I like that rule now where they let you keep pushing. You know, you see a lot of that in the pros, too.
Exactly. And you can see who is lifting the plates in the weight room, because at that point it becomes a squat contest. You know, who can push that pile forward? And if you've got Isaiah Wilson, Cade Mays, Solomon Kinley, Andrew Thomas – those guys can push some weight. So, if
how about O'Harry in there at the bottom of the pile? You just kind of see that arm reach out and snatch
it. That's who it was. It's Harry in that. Yeah. So the crucible in the middle of that. I mean, I expected him to come out like a big diamond because the pressure and heat and all that. He dropped the ball and he pulls it in, but right next to him was a very flattened Jackson Harris, the tight end. So I thought the tight ends had a big game. I think that could be beneficial going forward. Just not. I mean, even if they don't get thrown to, I make a joke about throwing to the tight ends, but to have him back gives you a couple more options. You can rotate in, Werner and Nada, somebody else to spell them. Ford's getting more playing time. And I think what we're going to see this week, I like your idea of Channing Tindall. That might even be a prediction in 3-2-1 that we see Quay Walker and Channing Tindall do a little something, coming forward. But I thought that Georgia, despite the speckled nature of people pointing to things they don't like about the penalties and situations, I thought Georgia played a much better game against Vanderbilt than it did Tennessee, and I think they are peaking. They're fixed. All the stuff that you said that Georgia would have growing pains with, coverages, defensive line depth, all those things seem to be working out a little bit better. I'm not saying that Georgia's going to beat LSU. I'm just saying that some of the issues that – we're not complaining about the same issue week after week. That's the point I'm trying to get to.
Well, here's the thing,
fixes on the offensive line, fixes at tight ends, fixes a wide receiver, fixes at quarterback, fixes, across the line. So there's not a whole lot you can point to that says Georgia needs to be fixed before Saturday.
Yeah. Here's the thing about Vanderbilt, too. I wasn't impressed with them on the hoof as I thought I might be, and I was tending towards – the way they played against Notre Dame. But, everybody's talking about Notre Dame being big time, one of the top four now because of their schedule and everything. But, they were really in a position to win that game at Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame had a hard time stopping that passing game for Vanderbilt. And they got some people. I mean, that back they got's pretty good. They cut us up a little bit on a couple cutback plays that hurt us that we over pursued. But I was really impressed that even though they did make that first, got in our territory and got near the goal line, we got it, kept them to a field goal. That was good goal line defense there. And so some areas that we got to show that we improved from 2016 to 17, that we got to prove that we are just as good in 18, red zone offense and defense, when the other team got you down there, can we punch it in? Red zone defense, can we keep them out? And those are two things that are still maybe a little bit up for grabs, because Missouri was able to punch it in on us, and we've had to kick some field goals down there. But
I'd also like to see a few more takeaways from this defense.
Sure.
I think that again
everybody wants more takeaways,
but I'm just saying from a from the standard that they set last year with some of those takeaways, I'd like to see that again this year against the LSUs.
But we've already had more defensive touchdowns than
this
we did.
This is true. I know. I was going to say that.
You know, I'll take 8-3. That's what we are. We're 8 turnovers that we've gotten, and we've only turned the ball over 3 times. And when you look at our team, the myriad of people that have touched the ball and the chance for fumbles that we have to not only to have only lost 3 fumbles and 1 fumble and 2 interceptions. Come on, man.
Yeah, but they let's put Georgia has put the ball on the ground a number of times.
We have, but part of putting it on the ground is knowing how to, I gave a guy a game ball out at Nebraska 1 year because he recovered 4 fumbles and they were all ours. Anthony Stafford. He did.
Hey, that's fantastic. That's huge.
That's practice. So, when they let y'all go out to practice, have you ever seen our guys
absolutely.
Practice fumble recovery?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, we see in practice stripping the ball. We see ball security. We see ball recovery. We see scoop and score. We see the one where they're
right.
laying down. They have to roll over and get it. You know, so, we've seen them run
every – We know how to do it.
Every ball
– But that's what because the ball's on the ground doesn't mean the other team's got
to
get it.
Yeah, I'm just saying that I'd like to see a few more of those against – when you're going to go into the Auburn game, the LSU game, you know, Florida, I think that
– We only need 3 offense, against Auburn.
Yeah.
Gus Malzahn, they painted the dang – this morning they painted the dang in his driveway, a goal line, so he could practice crossing it on his way to work.
Hey, with that, I will tell you real quick about academia. I'm enjoying their Hunkertown Brown Ale.
Maybe you should have another.
Maybe I should. I'm just going to tell you, this is like cake. This is fantastic beer. The Hunkertown Brown Ale. And you got the IQ IPA?
The IQ IPA, as always.
And we had one of our viewers swung by this past Saturday and checked him out, and he said that the beer was good too. So we're just not – you don't have to take our word for it. We have folks that are going out there trying Academia, and they are loving it. And this week at Academia, I thought this was very cool. This Saturday, they've got a fitness class on Saturday morning. So people can call the brew pub and reserve their spots. It's $10, and it includes a post-class beer.
Well, there you go. I mean, so you're really getting your workout for $5 and then a $5 beer.
Right. So starts at
I'm running toward that beer.
Yeah, exactly. starts at 10 a.m., so you can go out there. And it features brewery-inspired cardio and light weights.
Man,
that sounds like picking up kegs to me.
That sounds to me like you. Hey, that thing that hops over there. We need you to carry it. Over here. It sounds to me like they're not only getting free labor, but they might be having you pay them to move stuff around to the thing.
That's incentive-based workout.
That is an incentive-based workout. Plus, they're going to have a huge LSU watch party. They've been doing this for all the games. They have the priority seating available for UGA alumni. You just call and reserve your spot over there in the beer hall. And they will have a limited number of the custom pint glasses available for $5 each. So you can get the, you know, one with a little savage on it. And of course, the game will be televised on all the bar TVs and the two big screens. So, but Saturday morning, if you want to work out before you have all that good food, swing by there at 10 a.m. It's $10. Call, make a reservation, and you can work out at Academia.
I want to get into some of these questions because we've got several today. People asking about O-line, some recruiting questions. There's obviously a big commitment coming down. 3 guys decommitted last week. We didn't that happened after the show. we've got one
that's
question.
One way to wrap it up.
We've got one question, though.
I mean, we're done with that topic.
Have you watched our MO in recruiting the last couple
years?
Yeah,
I totally agree with you.
You got to make room for the big-timers, man. We lost a great one. It's nothing against the other two.
But I know.
I want to ask you this, though, Coach, because a couple of people have asked this already. You're a guy who has firsthand knowledge of going into Death Valley with a sophomore quarterback. And
freshman.
Winning. A freshman he was at the time,
but
wasn't he?
He's about 28. But no, he was 20.
He looked 28.
Well, yeah. Talk to me about being in that environment, being in that atmosphere. You know, what's Georgia up against this weekend?
Well, you're definitely up against a hostile crowd. There's no question about that. And they're just take a lot of personal pride in it being their stadium and their turf, you know what I mean? And going into it's just the dangest thing I've ever seen. You go in there and, you know, you got to wind your way in. There's no other way to get your buses down there. So you got to go through just unbelievable throng of people. And they're –
shooting. They're hate-filled people.
Well, they're shooting you the finger, but I've never – I mean, I've been mooned by a man before, but mooned by women on the way in there.
That's an invitation in Southern Louisiana.
They were mooning me and our team. Just unbelievable. That was pretty – I tell you what was one of the funniest things. This one guy came running up to the bus, you know, like this. I said, oh, as a fan, he thought that was LSU's bus. He was bombed, and so I you know, I just waved at him, and he went like that, you know. So, but and I had told a couple other guys on the way, you know, you have these police escorts where you go booming in there, and you got these four or five different units of guys on these motorcycles, and they go to the next – one group will go to the next stoplight, and then when you get through there, the other group's already heading to the next. We're buzzing along there about 50 miles an hour, and this guy runs through there and hits our bus. And I'm talking about – grazed it with his car. We didn't stop, but I've never been hit on a dang
police escort.
And I don't know, the guy must have been bombed, but it was kind of scary. I'm looking over my right, out to right, and here comes this car right at our bus, and he hit the back of it, but we kept going.
What was your favorite memory from that day outside of the win?
Just after the game, the way our kids reacted, you know, to know we had a and Kirby Smart played a big part in the game. You know, he had 12 tackles. He was always good at halftime, you know, talking about what they were doing. And, you know, I talked to our team about we just – both teams had really been unbelievable on offense, and nobody stopped each other much. I said, hey, I don't think either one of us is going to be able to keep this up, making all these plays. So, you know, hey, let's keep on fighting, and it might be one or two play game. And, you know, we ended up scoring once, and they scored two field goals. But it was an exciting game. And, you know, who would have thought that the next week we'd have played Tennessee and they were the national champion?
Yeah.
But the other thing that was good about that for us was we had a lineman out. You know, Jonas Jennings had to come in and play center for Miles Lucky, and he did a good job jumping in there. And they had Booger McFarland, and we just couldn't block Booger. It wasn't because we were bad, but he was just a dominating player. And last play that we made, I told our team they called timeout because they wanted to get the ball back. If we made a first down, they weren't going to get it back. So this is brilliant coaching by me. Now I said, we're going to run a one man route to Champ. Champ, I'm not going to tell you what to do. Just go do what you want to. And everybody on the team, you block your assignment first, but then block Booger. And we're going to try to get it off. And he hit us right at the last second. I mean, that's exactly what I told him. And Champ went in and broke out, 21-yard completion. But how about Champ that day? Played, I think, 97 plays.
That's unbelievable.
And some of them on special teams too, but just a terrific player. And, you know, that game there, you know, Quincy had some issues as we kept going there, but that game right there, if we'd had even close to the receivers we had in that game the rest of his career, his sophomore and junior years, it made a lot of difference. We had Tony Small and, you know, Wiggins, and we had Javaris Johnson and those guys, and then we had Champ on the outside. I mean, that was pretty strong.
That's legit. Real cool question from Will Bible. It says, our family's going to the UGA-LSU game. Is it possible to attend a dog walk, so to speak, for an away game, first time in an away game with the family, that's wanted to connect and tailgate with others. Will, they usually have dog walks. The trick is finding out where they're going to be. So you need to find out where the entrance for the opposing team is. And just
be watching, yeah, and be watching the UGA football Twitter account. They're normally pretty good about letting you know when it's going to happen, give you in the general area, especially if you tweet at them. So send them a little something. I guarantee you they'll
be
hooked up.
I know you usually bring up the questions, but I want to address that one because I want to warn Will, if you're there with your family, LSU's a crazy place. And I swear after we went down there last time, I was going back after being cussed out by a five-year-old, you know.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Bad words?
Oh, yes. And his parents are just standing there, his kids yelling at me.
They're probably cheering him on.
And I'm like, you don't even know who I'm for. I just
did you have on a Georgia jersey?
No. I only wear black. I wear black.
So what did he say to you? What was it about?
I can't repeat the words.
What was it about?
Basically, something along the lines of blankety blank, tiger bait. I mean,
what did you do?
Blankety blank.
What did you do?
I just kept walking.
What did you do to precipitate him?
I walked past.
Just the fact you were opposing team.
I wasn't wearing gold or
purple.
So. And he was doing it to everybody that walked by, any Georgia fans. I'm like, he looked like me. Okay, maybe he was 8, but he looked 5. And I'm like, this place is a zoo. So my point to Will is, you won't be alone over there. There'll probably be a bunch of
watch your children
LSU fans there as well. They are a rowdy fun.
I can't wait. I'm excited.
No, I swear I wasn't going back just because that place is nuts.
I like to hear you say that.
All right, we've got a lot of questions here. Definitely want to hop in on some of these. Chadwick Ivory says, "How do you feel Georgia's going to be able to block against this LSU D line? I do think it's going to be a big test for them because I think this is the most talented group they'll have faced to this point. I don't really think that's a question. Maybe." I would say outside of Auburn, it's one of the top two you're going to face all year in the regular season anyway.
I think the bigger question is, what is Georgia's offensive line?
What's the alignment? What's the arrangement?
Out.
Yeah.
So you got Cade Mays, maybe he's back at right guard like he was last week. And, you know, shout out to him for starting at left tackle and right guard different games. But, you know, now with Saul McKinley out, who takes over that left guard spot? Or is he, you know, we were told yesterday.
Trey Hill, not Kendall Baker,
who was there all last year.
Maybe Kendall, but you got to believe that hopefully he'll be able to play. But all you got to do is put on the Florida tape. How did they block him?
Yeah.
I like our chances on blocking. You're not going to run up and down the field on them, but just trust me on this. I sure hope they play us man coverage. Yeah. I just hope. Here's the LSU baby right there.
That baby,
see that finger there?
That baby shooting a bird at people.
Isn't that pretty good?
If you have Trey Hill at left guard, you got a true freshman there.
Don't be talking about these inexperienced guys.
Cade Mays right guard, a redshirt freshman at right tackle.
A true sophomore at left.
I'm not talking about the inexperience. I'm talking about what this does for the future. I know we only talk about one game ahead, but you would have those guys, the being tempered in that crucible, playing at LSU on the road. If they come out of that game able to block those guys and play in that environment,
they will.
Wow.
And be honest, wouldn't a lot of Georgia fans have been a lot more anxious about this in past years?
Oh, God, terrifying.
With that arrangement against LSU at home, against their defensive line, which is always very stellar.
You were terrified with them with seniors when you had Greg Pike and Brandon Cablano and guys like that. You were nervous as hell.
Yep.
I think they got good defensive front and all, but they, you know, this is where we got you here. How many guys are high draft choices on that D-line?
That's a little tough. I'll have to go check out the depth chart just to make sure.
How about it, Dave? How many guys they got listed in their defensive line that are pro linemen?
Let's
right
see.
Now?
I got it right here. You've got Rashard Lawrence. He's definitely going to be drafted. I'm not sure how high we'll see about that. Breeden Fehoko is a guy who almost ended up at Georgia. We covered that recruitment. He's the nose tackle, junior transfer, so he's got some time. I haven't seen anything from him right this second. So you make a good point. The Michael Divinity is right there. I mean, they've got some.
They're good, but don't give the jersey the credit.
That's right. You're right. It's true. Now the secondary is always strong. They're still very good. They got some high draft choices there. Will be Grant Delpit, Greedy Williams, Christian Fulton. Those guys are all very 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 substantial players.
And
but
then Devin White.
I agree with you very much.
And they lost the one linebacker for the year against Miami, right? What was his name? He was really one of their best players.
I know but they lost. I can't think of it.
But I just think sometimes you get caught up in the other team and not about ours. I mean, I always like to listen to the other coach talk about the team, you know. And Coach Ogeron yesterday was just like, well, they got Jake Fromm, and then if something happens to him, they put in that dual threat guy, number one, and then they got so many backs, I can't even keep up with them, and then they got those linemen, they got the guys coming in, freshmen playing for Georgia, the offensive line, and that defensive backfield, good gracious alive.
Get the Hummer and get out of town.
Actually, that was too, quite a little too legible.
I'm trying to make it where you can hear it.
Well, if you have your Ogeron's English Dictionary, he was very, very complimentary.
He's a great coach, too, in a lot of ways. I mean, you look at his success. Not many guys have won national championships on the East Coast and the West Coast. Well, he did it at Miami. He did it at Southern Cal, recruiting defensive linemen. And he just had a bad shot there at Ole Miss. It's for some reason, they just, you know, first shot out of the box, he didn't do it. But I give him credit for what he's done. I give Ensminger a lot of credit for what the offense are running. I mean, they're an established team right now that, you know, his second year as a head coach. I think they'll continue to get better. And the thing that worries me, they're going to recruit the state of Louisiana like it's supposed to be recruited.
Yeah, he's a fantastic recruiter. Every time I've met him, he's tried to recruit us just to cover whatever team he's at. We tease him, and it's out of respect. I mean, he's damn good at what he does.
He's a great figure also.
He is. He's great for college football.
Yeah.
So was Les Miles, and I hope Les Miles gets a job somewhere.
And he knows Chaney, too. They coached together at Tennessee.
That's right. I forgot about that. Speaking of a great team, I want to give a quick shout-out to Aaron Overhead Doors. If you go, they've revamped their website, so it's a little bit easier to check out. And I noticed that they have their Angie's List Super Service Award for 2017. And I had somebody ask me, you know, you mentioned Aaron Overhead Doors, you know, where are they located? Where do they service? And I'll give you a quick rundown. If you're in Alpharetta, Gainesville, Buford, Johns Creek, Cumming, North Atlanta, which incorporates a huge area, Cumming, Tecula, Sandy Springs, Duluth, Suwanee, Dunwoody, and many, many more places. In other words, if you need something done with your overhead garage door, you need a repair, you need to replace, you're having issues with anything of it, let Aaron Overhead Doors know, and they will take care of it. You can request an appointment. You can even book online, and they will come out and tell you what it costs for free. So, not too many people will do that. And again, when they do send out a service person, it is not some contractor, you know, working out the back of a sketchy van, you know, with free candy right on the side. It is a legitimate Aaron Overhead Doors employee, insured, a person who works in their office. They also do a bunch of good charity work. They have so many five-star reviews, I can't even keep up with it. They almost have as many five stars as Kirby Smart does on his team.
There you go.
You got Yelp, Google, you know, Better Business Bureau. If you check out their reviews, you will see that there's a reason when, you know, we heard from Aaron over at Doors and said, hey, we'd like to be a sponsor of the show. And we're like, okay, well, you know, and we've had some other people we've turned down.
You got to be five-star against
the
show.
Well, here's the thing. We're going to put our name behind us because we believe in it. You know, we believe in academia. I believe in YourPie. I'm still trying to get one person to get a YourPie franchise because I believe it's one of the greatest ways to make money, serve your community, great food. It's a fun job. It's a fun franchise to own. I've never heard of them closing one. I've only heard of them opening. I know they were like 58. Drew French and Natalie French, you know, they keep getting on these 40 under 40.
Get a little bounty on this thing and have it the Georgia Bulldog Group and have a lot of stockholders.
Yeah, there you go. We'll put together a GoFundMe and then find somebody to run it. The whole point of that, though, is I want the free Pizza for Life gift card.
I bet. It's all selfishly motivated for you.
But again, it's like if you get a chance, if you're looking in, it's a fantastic economy right now. If you're looking to get out of your job, want to do something great, go with contact YourPie Franchising. They will hook you up. They will take care of you. It's one of the best places out there.
Jeff Dyer says he's got five on it. he said he's willing to chip it in.
Either way. Jump in there, Jeff.
Yeah. Also, I want to give a quick shout-out to 365 Game Day. They're doing wonderful stuff on their Facebook page. Check out 365 Game Day for all your gear needs. We have fans that are not just a Georgia Watches show, but if you're a Alabama fan or you got a Florida State fan in your family or a Clemson fan, you can get gear from 365 Game Day for those schools as well. They're up to about 7 or 8 different teams and a couple NFL teams. So check out 365 Game Day.
All right.
Let's hit a couple more questions.
I want to talk about recruiting a little bit because that's important. Lewis Cine committing tomorrow, announcing. Lewis Cine is a 4-star Rivals 100 safety out of the state of Texas. Now, formerly he was a kind of Atlantic Coast guy. I believe he was up in the Virginia or Maryland area, if I'm not mistaken. But now playing his high school ball out in Texas. I believe he's at Trinity Christian now, which is where Shedeur Sanders, the son of Deion Sanders, is playing. We had an interview with him up recently as well. But Cine committing tomorrow, announcing via Chiming In Media. He's going to be picking between Georgia, Florida, Penn State, and Michigan, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I believe those are his four options.
No Texas?
Texas is in there. That's the five.
That's what I thought.
You're right.
Okay.
I really feel good about Georgia's chances here. He had a very good visit by all accounts. Really, the kind of buzz took off around Sine in Georgia around the first to the middle of the summer. And since then, it's just been red hot. He's visited twice. He came for the locker room reveal, was in town Tennessee to take in his official visit. I mean, this is a guy who's familiar with that staff. He loves how they play the position and really likes what he's seen from J.R. Reed and Richard LeCount. Now, I mentioned we've got a story coming up called Making the Case. I think for Sine, there are clearer paths to playing time elsewhere. But he doesn't seem to care about that. He does seem to care about trusting the coaches and trusting the staff and the style with which they play, and that's why I give Georgia the edge here. I think Georgia lands a very, very talented safety prospect yesterday. Tomorrow, I'm sorry. We don't have a time on it just yet, but we'll definitely keep everybody abreast.
So basically we're going to be on commit watch all day.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know what your job is tomorrow.
I'm flying.
What about that?
No.
What about
that flying to Texas?
Tight end out there at Arkansas that we're not necessarily in. Henry's brother. Where you think?
Yeah, Hudson Henry.
Where's he going?
Probably going to end up with the Hogs. It's just a family thing at this point.
Has he gone to the games?
they've recruited surprisingly well over the course of the last little bit. Now, the other thing we obviously I think should talk about, the three decommitments last week. You had Jaden Hazelwood, five-star wide receiver, number three player in the nation, four-star Rivals 250, defensive back Jalen Perry, and then four-star Rivals 250 linebacker J.D. Bertrand all decide to reopen their process. Got to say, was not hugely surprised by Perry and Bertrand.
Well, we predicted as much. If you read the 3-2-1 report, you knew that those two were coming, or at least two were coming, and actually there's probably going to be one more.
Yeah, and I think that, let me start off by saying this. I think both of those kids are very talented players. Yes. I think they're going to end up playing probably against Georgia at some point.
LSU just reached out to Bertrand.
So yeah. South Carolina looks like the odds-on leader for Perry right now. Auburn's in
good
the
fit
mix
for,
there.
Good
so.
Fit for him, yep.
They're going to have a chance to maybe play against the Bulldogs at some point.
There's a reason Georgia took them in their commitments.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I know a lot of people say, well, they dumped Georgia, and I think that might have been more of a mutual arrangement because there comes times when you look at what Georgia has on the field and you're like,
But you also look at what's out there. Yeah. I mean, the difference for us now, to me, we've definitely taken control of the state, but when you're on national television about every game and you got guys going to the league and you got people talking you up like people are talking up Kirby Smart, I mean, kids are looking at us from a lot
like
a kid tomorrow. And I'll predict that we get him. I mean, from what I'm hearing, it's my chance once in a while because I miss some. I miss Papo. But I think Papo's going to see the deal coming back around, too, that Auburn's not really living on Tulsa time like it was. But seriously, though, I think we'll get signed, though. I really do, and I'm echoing what you say. But it's not fair to downgrade any player from the standpoint of those. It's not that they're not good enough here, but you're looking at Kirby's hired here to get the absolute best 25 best players. And, hey, based on performance, that's what he'll do. That's what he's done. And that's a hard job with this early signing date to pick and choose who you can get and who you can't get and who you're going to let go and who you're going to save one for. So,
it's very important. I'm glad you brought up the early signing day because I think that it's important to do it early enough like this to give kids time to explore other options, get out, take visits, and see these places. That's doing right by the kid.
Well, that's what I was saying about being a mutual decision. Some of these kids are looking at what Georgia has. Georgia's looking at what it has available. And the coach could be upfront with a kid and say, look, you can come here. You see what we have in the linebacker room or whether in the secondary room. Do you see yourself starting over these guys? And maybe the kids say, yes, I do. And, they stay committed. Some of them say, no, I think I have a better chance to play elsewhere.
Right.
And the coach is like, we hate to lose you, or, hey, that's fine with us. It is a fluid thing when you're taking commitments, 16 months ahead of signing day. You haven't seen most of these kids, you haven't seen their junior tape, much less their senior tape. And then, like you said, when you're on TV every week and a kid out of Rivals 100 safety out in Texas says, yeah, I'm coming to visit. You lose Jaden Hazelwood, now a Rivals 100 wide receiver out of Tennessee whose teammates with the Georgia commits, like, You know, I'd like to come down and check it out.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how things pan out with Hazelwood. It's not over. But when you have three at one time, there's a tendency for everybody to say what's going wrong. But better now than later. But I do feel like this point that I would like to put the exclamation point on, when you say, hey, you know, look in the room and see if you can play and all that, what you normally you say to a guy is, you know, at this time, we can't really tell you if we're going to have a scholarship for you or not. And I'm not saying this is true on these two, but here's the deal. If you want to look around, you can. If we have one, we'll give you one. But right now, you're not highly rated as some other guys. We'll be able to tell you here, you know, maybe with a week to go, if you want to go ahead and open it up, we might still come back on you. But, you know, that's the only fair way to do it, I think, is just tell the guy where as compared to somebody say, good God, they dropped this guy at the last minute. He's got no chance to go anywhere.
And see, that was my point. Somebody asked me about this because they know that I've railed for years about teams dropping a kid.
Yep.
And I'm like, look, I've evolved, if you will, on that, because I'm like, look, if you're going to tell a kid with plenty of time to change, okay, you took his commitment, he's committed for 3 months or so, 5 months, a year, but he still has months to go before signing day. If you can turn to him and say, hey, it's not going to work out, and you effectively cut him. I mean, there's no other way to do it. Then you get to me, I'm like, well, at least you didn't let the kid commit, then have to transfer, you know, or you cut him at the last second. And there have been a couple times that Georgia screwed up on that. You know, they tell a kid.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm trying to think of an offensive lineman that they did that to at the last second, you know, and he wound up having to go somewhere else. And I was like, I was livid about
that. I remember that. The one that always stands out to me is Tenille Carter. That first year, you know, they dropped him really at the very last moment. Right. He was ready to go. He'd worked hard to early enroll. So I that was not comfortable. But
was it Dowdell?
What else you got?
Yes, Aaron Dowdell.
So
Chad O'Kyrie says, what's the deal with Hazelwood? Is he coming back? Did the Adam Sasser situation play into his decision? I don't think the Sasser thing had anything to do with any of that. I don't think that played at all. What we've heard is that he likes the lifestyle out at Miami. He thinks that that's intriguing. Personally, I think that Jaden is a guy with so many options who's been committed for so long and is seeing that Georgia is not Georgia is an incredibly effective offense, but they're not a feature offense. This is wide receiver by committee. He's a true NFL wide receiver one, and this is not an offense that's tailored for a guy like that, at least at this moment. I'm not saying it can't be, but from what you're seeing right now, there are some clearer options, I think, out there. Miami lost Amon Richards. His career is over, so they've got an opening at a spot like that. You know, Auburn, say what you want about their passing game, they've kind of established themselves as a landing spot for big-time receivers over the Gus Malzahn era. Regardless of the success they've had, that's where high school receivers are choosing to go over and over and over again. We're seeing it a lot.
Going to have the first ball machine quarterback to throw the ball to him. What's going on with their passing game over there?
Jared's taking a lot of heat.
Hey, seriously, how much
time? He was fantastic last year.
Did you happen to watch Mississippi State game at all?
No.
Hey, Mississippi State had the ball for 16 minutes straight.
Yeah.
They had it for 4 minutes, then they punted, and Auburn fumbled it. They kept it for four more minutes. Then it was halftime. Then they took the next kickoff and kept it for eight. Auburn's offense didn't even – they could have gone out to Beau Rivage. They didn't play for 16 total minutes, which is about an hour.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's brutal. And those guys get all warmed up, and they get on sideline, they get cold. When you see the quarterback on the sideline
having cold down there,
I'm just saying they're not. When you see a guy on the sideline having to throw the ball because he hadn't been on the field in an hour, you know, to keep his arm limber, you know that your defense is just getting gashed.
Anyway, I don't think it's over for Hazelwood in Georgia by any stretch of the imagination. I think that almost two years of being committed, that plays huge in Georgia's favor. He's very familiar with the staff,
a lot of friends here,
familiar with the players. I think that Georgia sits still in a great spot. Is it as good as it was? No. Obviously, because you had him on the commit list, but I'm not at all eliminating Georgia from that contention. So, something to watch for.
Last note: if you swing over to UGASports.com, we never talk about where we actually work. We're supposed to tell people to swing by UGASports.com and get a subscription because that's what we do. We're going to have video analysis of John Plumlee, Georgia quarterback commit. So if you want to see some John Plumlee
stuff.
Got
a big game last week, then.
Yeah, we got we have some video of that. So we'll have that later in the day. You need to check it out. Of course, we have the grades posted from the this past game. We have a story about Kirby Smart basically challenging his defense, telling them they need to be more physical. We saw Monty Rice come in and make some big give some big licks. I think if he's kind of working himself back into it, those Kirby Smart likes to talk about those knockback hits, you know, and I think he can deliver those. Maybe Quay Walker can deliver a few in this game. We'll see. Anyway, that's all the time we have for this week's show. I want to give a shout-out to Athens Ford, Aaron Overhead Doors, Europie, of course, Academia Brewing. Try that Hunker Down Brown Ale. It's really good.
Some champions here with the tamales.
Hey, now, do you just sit back there, mister. I got to leave tomorrow. Of course, Cable East. I didn't even mention Cable East earlier. Thanks so much, Robert Wall, for sponsoring the show. You're a great, great friend of the show. We appreciate it. And, of course, 11 Alive for letting us be on their page and be on their airwaves and basically ruin their credibility. We appreciate it very much, Love Live. Thank you very much. And, guys, tune in next week, and we will talk all about the LSU game.
LSU victory for Georgia.
you might want to clear that up.
Did you get that in for Georgia?
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.